Welcome to Collective Culture, a podcast where we discuss Twitter, youth, participatory journalism, and social movements. We're excited to start the conversation and dive into the data. Let's get started with the introduction for the series.
And thanks for joining us today on our podcast. Today we'll be launching into a actually five-part series discussing just youth participation and participatory journalism in the digital age, specifically focusing on three movements, which are we'll describe later on in the podcast. There will be me, Molly, and Bryson and Sam all discussing these today. So let's launch right into it with kind of some background on what we'll be chatting with this series. Take it away, Sam.
Yeah, so first we're going to get into some background information for the movements and for what we are going to be researching. So first I wanted to start off with the youth participation in social movements. The concept of a new generation challenging the status quo is not new. This has happened before time and time again, but oftentimes youth participation in social movements is charged by a lack of trust in traditional institutions, right? So youth activism has developed through generations, stemming from rejecting the way that older generations handle affairs and the way that things are done that will likely affect them in the future, right? Usually young people don't like the way things are being done in a traditional sense, and they're like, let's make some change. So we kind of wanted to look at that in terms of all three of our social movements we've went into. But as soon as there is that aspect of cross-generational impact, these movements tend to appeal to youth. So like examples from the past, we can look at climate change. As soon as people were like, oh, that's gonna affect my kids and my future, it was like, we're taking charge, like we're kind of like taking the reins on that one, right? So yeah, I think it's definitely the cross-generational impact. Youth participation is often less traditional in format also, and focuses on the autonomy of decision-making for a collective. So it's a lot of people making their own decisions and deciding kind of their own path for the movement and shaping the way that they want it to kind of carry forward, right? And also like integrating the aspect of democracy into decision-making. It's a lot of thinking and feeling as a collective rather than just kind of like, this is good for me, so this is good for everyone. They're taking a lot of different perspectives into consideration. And then we also wanted to go and give an overview of online movements in general and participatory journalism. So participatory journalism has become a staple in really just globalizing social movements and allowing people around the world to share their voice and how the platform is visible to people beyond just their social circles. If you look at things 20 years ago, there was no real way to reach out to this many people or reach out to people like across the world with just your thoughts and feelings instantly in like 150 characters or less. Twitter has definitely helped us with that, and just social media in general, but you're able to share your opinion with people beyond your social reach in your kind of real life, right? So then online voices push for all voices to be heard as well. Online movements push for all voices to be heard and allow opinions from different groups to be heard rather than just a singular viewpoint. So that kind of gets back into my previous point of just allowing for the autonomy of the movement to kind of grow and create its own path rather than just something that benefits one group of people. It's almost been democratized in a way where social media allows us to kind of care for each other and have this collective aspect of care that wasn't really prevalent in a ton of past major social movements before social media. In our case specifically, we went a ton to Twitter and digital activism. So Twitter has really become the voice of the people. Twitter allows people to share and have a voice of platforms share and have a voice on their platform with people, like I said, beyond their social circle. They can really just put out anything you want to say, which can definitely be a good thing and a bad thing in some cases, because it's out there for the rest of your life, right? But you're really sharing those feelings on social media in a way that hasn't really been happening in the past. There also is a trend factor when it comes to digital activism. So young people really want to show off their interest in social movements on social media, and they want to show that they're interested and show that they care about the world around them, right? So that can be seen definitely in the form of performative activism, where people tend to post content just to be seen and act as if they're informed, when in reality, they're probably posting it just to be seen as part of the movement, to be seen as if they're informed and really curate that online kind of persona and online profile, right? So that's definitely an issue in digital activism, but definitely something we'll go on to cover in our future podcasts. Twitter also uses hashtags, which allows us to filter the results by certain terms and group the tweets together. So this allows users to use their tweets and hashtag things and then have them all kind of grouped together. People can go through those hashtags specifically, browse by hashtags rather than just their internal following. And a lot of this online aspect of the social movements is really just going beyond your social reach in your real life, really just allowing that to globalize and allowing the social movement to grow over time and grow into this huge, like, massive movement rather than just kind of a local thing or a global thing, right? But yeah, that's kind of some background on our research project so far. And next, I believe Molly is going to get into the research questions.
Yeah, thanks, Sam, for just introducing and giving us some context as we launch into this podcast series. So what I'm trying to do here is really tell you about our three key questions that we wanted to answer. As a group, we came up with questions that we thought really encompassed the key areas to focus on, which were like Twitter and social media, the three movements, which are YOSOY 132, Arab Spring, and Black Lives Matter, and also looking at youth participation. So our first question is, how has Twitter contributed to fostering an environment for participatory journalism in the rise and propagation of the three chosen movements? Our second question is, compare and contrast the roles of digital activism and Twitter in YOSOY 132, Arab Spring, and Black Lives Matter. And to what extent has youth participation between the ages of 15 and 25 played a significant role in digital activism and participatory journalism on Twitter? So we came up with these because they, like I said, they focus on our key areas. And these three movements were chosen because they take place actually around the world. So none of these movements take place in the same area, which was really important for us just gaining a more like global perspective on the idea of youth participation in news creation and in social media and Twitter. In a world that's becoming increasingly dependent on technology and digital activism, we really discovered a need for more specific research on Twitter and its role, particularly because we recognize the way that Twitter has shaped social movements and its unique abilities that it offers to users. And so there's a lot of research that says that social media is a big part of movements, but we really saw a gap for Twitter specific research within these three movements. So, we chose Twitter, like I said, because it really made an appealing social platform for data collection, as it's relevant, clear, and contains unaltered tweets from the time of the movements, because tweets actually can't be changed later on. So this was an important part for our data collection. This research is important in understanding the extent to which youth have used Twitter and mobilize and foster activism, as well as looking at the content posted on Twitter during these movements. We really thought that with an increased awareness of how youth are using Twitter and more broadly social media, experts can work within the journalism and technology industry to support and understand activism that's taking place on the digital front. So our goal of this research is really to help help people wanting to use Twitter in the future and use social platforms in the future for social movements and for political movements. And so this might help the journalism industry as it evolves to find a place for participatory news collection, and also for people who are developing platforms and maintaining platforms like Twitter to ensure that it's always a space where the key the key factors and key features that we need for activism to take place are being kept and preserved for future uses. So now I'm going to give it to Bryson, who's going to talk about the design, the study design, and also the process of our research methods.
Amazing. Thanks, Molly. So in order to address our research problem, we kind of approach this in two main ways through a mixed method approach. The first being a quantitative approach through the data from Twitter, and the second way being a qualitative approach through scholars' perspectives in their scholarly articles addressing our topic as specific and relevant as we could find. For our qualitative data, we used, you know, Ryerson's library due to the endless supply of scholarly journals on thousands of different topics. So our best bet at finding information relevant to our chosen topic was going to be through using the online library. And in regards to our quantitative data collection, we wanted to focus on a large target audience that would address our three key movements. And we collectively decided on Twitter as a social media platform. Kind of has been known as one of the key ways of sharing and communicating, you know, information, details, opinions, or other resources on whatever the user desires. So we decided to grab 50 tweets that were sent out during each of the three movements, YoSoy 132, Arab Spring, and the Black Lives Movement. And so instead of having to find a, you know, second party website that collected and analyzed data from Twitter, it was discovered that Twitter included its own set of, you know, filters that would allow us to search for tweets based on the date they were sent out, the language of tweets, and the keywords and symbols included in the tweets. So the original plan was to only do a simple random sampling for our quantitative data, you know, being the tweets. However, after having to set a few filters and scroll through thousands upon thousands of tweets over the months or years these movements were taking place, we found it kind of more ideal to use a mix of clustered sampling and simple random sampling to collect our quantitative data. So we also tried to hit a quota while data collecting and decided to grab 50 tweets each, totaling 150 tweets between the three movements. We originally were kind of aiming for a higher number of tweets to make our data more reliable, but due to the time restraints and a missing team member, we decided to see how many tweets could be collected and analyzed in the course of around 2 to 3 hours, which resulted in about 50 tweets. So that was the quota that we aimed for. In regards to the clustered sampling, we used that alongside the simple random sampling as we put our tweets into subtopics, and those subtopics being, you know, category sentiment that the message in those tweets fell under, being information and demonstration details, which is about the movement or the protest within the movement, frustration, concern, and criticism, which they tended to kind of overlap each other fairly often. There's also misinformation, which was a little more difficult to find as it took a few extra steps to see if these tweets were in fact informative or misinformative. The last three were question, humor, and support, where some of these tweets, you know, fit into just one of these categories and sentiments, others fit under multiple categories, which is where kind of the coding came into play. We listed these categories as three-letter abbreviations as shown in figure one, such as INF for information, DEM for demonstration details, and so forth. We put these tweets collected into these subcategories after collecting them to kind of remain unbiased in how we collected those tweets, because even though we wanted to hit the quota of 50 tweets per movement, we didn't want to try and collect a certain amount of tweets that fell under, you know, information, concern, and support. Since that was kind of our original idea to grab around 6 to 7 per category, we preferred to remain unbiased, so we listed them in the categories after collecting all 50 tweets. So we formatted our data into an easy to analyze table also shown in figure one, and from left to right include categories slash sentiment, hashtags used in the tweet, number of retweets, date of tweet posted, and the full tweet itself. This way we were able to showcase a concise and easy to read table that included all the relevant information on the tweet that we gathered. And that was our process behind our research methods and the end of podcast number one. So the next few podcasts will look at a more in-depth analysis of each of our results from each movement, looking at both our qualitative and quantitative data. And thank you for listening and hope you enjoy the rest.